Welcome to the Mind Your Brain podcast, where I bring you inside the mind of the best athletes in the world, so you can understand the mental secrets of their success. My guest today is Ørsdis Jamsdóttir Andhud. She's a 3-time Olympian, a flag bearer for Iceland, and also a motivational speaker who managed to be a world-class athlete, javelin thrower, and finished a PhD at the same time. So what is happening in her mind to be so resilient? How does she set goals? What does she think of life-work balance? I hope you enjoy this episode where I dive deep and personal into Ørsdis's mind. Please subscribe, share, and follow me so you don't miss an episode. Let's get started with my guest, Ørsdis Jamsdóttir Andhud. Great to have you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
Yes, I'm. You know what? I'm super excited to have you because.
Thank you.
Yeah, because I've been trying to research more about you.
Oh.
And your life is like a book. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, starting from being from Iceland, which is just in itself something quite magic.
Yes.
And then going 3 times to the Olympics, going to 18 major competition,
yeah.
And then starting your business, having a PhD in immunology, and everything else. So I'm like super excited to have someone like you. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, you're most welcome. I'm excited about it.
So tell me something, because when I started to read things about you and watch things about you, and of course today I want to discuss with you about everything around the mind, everything around mental preparation, mental coaching. But yeah. Something struck me. When you were 10 years old, you told your parents that you want to go to the Olympics.
Yes.
how did that happen?
It was quite funny because I didn't really like sports when I was little, and I was very lazy, and my parents were trying to get me into sports, and I was like, no, I don't wanna. And then when I was 10, I started doing badminton because the girls in my class, they were all going to a competition. They were all doing badminton and they were going to a competition in another town, like out in the countryside in Iceland. And I was like, all my friends are going, I wanna go too. So I started training for badminton because of that. And as soon as I started training, it was like something just, and after a few months, I was like, after that competition, I was like, I wanna beat them. I wanna be the best. I think I came second or something in the competition. And I was like, I wanna be the best. And then I started training, like really putting effort into it. And then it was like more and more and more. And this was somewhere around the Olympic Games in Atlanta in 96. It was before the games. And I was hearing this about the Olympics the entire time. I was like, I wanna do that. I wanna go to the Olympics. And then it was one day, it was actually quite funny. I was 10 years old. I had been training badminton for a few months. And I announced to my parents in the kitchen back home, just like, I am gonna go to the Olympics. And they just looked at me like, sure you are.
And how did that come? Because when you are 10 years old, some kids want to be a fighter pilot, some kids want to be whatever, you know, an astronaut. And you're like, I want to make it to the Olympics. So what did suddenly click? What happened in your mind that says, okay, that's what I want to be, that's what I want to do?
I don't know. I think it was, I liked the competitiveness of it. And I liked the fact that I was starting to train. And I'm physically, I've always been very strong. And I think as soon as I started training and I started putting the effort in, I could see that I was getting better so fast. And I remember in my first year training badminton, everybody was surprised that this was my first year. Nobody could believe that I hadn't even trained for a full year. So I think that my progress was pretty fast. And for me to feel like I put in effort and I get this back, and to see that and to feel that on an everyday basis, that kind of just, then I wanted more and more, and I was willing to put in more effort. And then, of course, like I say, they were advertising the Olympics that were going to be in the summer, and I was super exciting, and I was like, this is something that I want to do.
It's quite interesting what you say about trying something, feeling good about it, and then wanting more. And I think this is something that I've seen with a lot of elite athletes that get into something and they get good at it and they have this joy of doing it, this happiness of doing it, and then they want more of it. So do you think that this is something that can be taught to anyone? Like anyone can find something they really enjoy so much that they can become really good at it?
Yeah, definitely. I believe that, you know, of course, it has to resonate with you. Like, I cannot come to you and say, like, if you train javelin enough, you will become interested and enthusiastic about it, because javelin might not be your thing. Yeah, so nobody else can tell you, like, you have to be interested in this. But I believe that everybody has something that they can feel this strongly about and that they can get this enthusiastic about. It's just a matter of finding what it is for you. And then I always have this phrase, like, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Yes.
And I really believe that talent is just a tiny, tiny part of it. I mean, I was never the most talented athlete. Never. Like, if you would have seen me throw javelin, when I was starting in the first year, nobody looked at me and said, this girl is going to go to the Olympics. Mm-hmm. But I worked really, really hard. And I was determined, and I think that gave me so much more than talent. So I think that anyone, if you find the thing that you're enthusiastic about, it doesn't have to be sport. Like, it can be running your own business, just something that gives you that joy and that pleasure and that reward. And you put all of your effort into it and focus, you can get pretty damn good at it.
Yeah, so that's it. That's really about exploring things and finding something you really enjoy doing so much that you don't care about the pain and you just go through it and you become really good at it, right?
No, I mean, I think you start enjoying it. I mean, there have always been things in my training that I don't enjoy. They're not my favorite things, but I find a way to enjoy them. If for nothing else, like, let's say medicine ball throws. I don't know if you know this. It's like heavy balls that we throw against the wall. It's like to train the throwing string. Mm-hmm. And you do hundreds of these throws every week.
Right.
And I used to, like, this was not my favorite thing. I'm not going to say that I hated it, but it was definitely not my thing. Mm-hmm. But when I started looking at it differently, so instead of like, oh, this is something that I have to do, it's like, oh, when I do this, I can feel that I'm getting stronger and I can feel that it's translating into a javelin. I feel I can, you know, I'm getting faster and all of this. And then I started to enjoy it because I changed my perspective of it. And I think this is like, we're always, doesn't matter what we're doing, we're always going to have to do something that we don't enjoy 100%. Yeah. But I think that we can find a way to enjoy everything, at least a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. I think changing the perspective on things is absolutely key, because at the end of the day, it's all about the mental representation we make in our head. It's nothing else, right?
Exactly.
So how can you build this ability to develop a mental picture which is a bit more compelling? Because at the end of the day, as you say, we don't always enjoy everything of what we are doing. We always go through hardship. So how do you eventually transform that into something which is more compelling?
Oh, you mean make it like learn how to enjoy it, basically?
Yes.
You mean that? Yeah.
That, well, changing your paradigm.
It depends on what it is, and like everybody needs to find their own way. And I mean, okay, another example is like I do some swimming in my training. And I used to hate like being in the water. Like, I can't listen to my music, like when I jog, and it's just, you know, water everywhere. And, you know, it was not my favorite thing either. But then I started focusing on like the movement and feeling how I'm flowing in the water and feeling again how I get better at it. I think that is the biggest thing for me for everything. It's like, if I can feel improvement, that encourages me. Like, I love to challenge myself in anything, doesn't matter what it is. And if I can feel that I'm getting better, then I get enthusiastic. It's like I'm addicted to that feeling of getting better. It doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. Like, ridiculous thing. You just say it. But it's very interesting that you would ask that, because I'm actually creating now an online course for athletes, because I want to give some back of that experience. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things that I'm going to take on, because I think this is so important, because like I say, everybody has something that they have to do that they don't like. And it's just a matter of like finding a way to enjoy it. And for me, what makes me enjoy things is, like I say, that I feel that I'm getting better and I feel improvement. That is like my spark.
Yes.
And I think that definitely does for a lot of people.
So you're practicing your sport for quite a long time, and you started very young. So you told your parents about, okay, I want to go to the Olympics. And you say, okay, at the beginning they were like, yeah, sure, you will go to the Olympics. What role did your parents play in your development as an athlete and in your mental development as well?
Well, I have to say that my dad, he played a huge role in my development. He himself was an athlete as well when he was younger, and he did athletics. And that was one of the reasons that I tried it. Because when I said that I wanted to go to the Olympics, that was in badminton. That was not even in athletics.
Okay.
So, but he was really like, he has had a very good mindset and the way that he looked at things. And I think that he played a huge role in my development because of how he talked to me about it. Mm-hmm. And I have a huge temper. And when I was younger, I had a hard time every now and then, like controlling it. Like if I didn't do well, like I would lose my temper. Mm-hmm. And I was so invested in my training and in my performance because I was putting in so much effort and I wanted to see the results. So when things weren't going well, I really struggled. Mm-hmm. And especially when I was younger. And he helped me so much in like how to handle that and how to deal with that. And it was actually quite, I mean, he was so involved in my training. He used to, I'm just going to give you an example here that shows his dedication. He drove me to every training. Mm-hmm. And when I started athletics a little bit later on, I started with throwing events. They found out pretty fast that I could throw things. And my coach at the time in the club, he was a sprinter. So he didn't know much about throwing.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a lot of throwing in the training itself. So I would do the sessions with the club and then I would go by myself out to the throwing field and I was throwing for an hour or two after training. And my dad would come to training and he was like, we were two of us there out in the throwing field and he would be throwing the discus back for 2 hours. Like that's the level of dedication that we're talking about.
And but I understand
that helped me a lot.
Yeah, and I understand it was quite instrumental as well in developing your mindset, because I remember something I heard, I think it was on a YouTube video, and you said the way you are approaching competition is based on what your dad told you. You want to win because you are the best, not because the competition is not as good as you. And I reflected on that and was like, that's very powerful, because that's really a mindset about how you embrace competition, how you embrace actually the environment, how you embrace the hurdles and all these kind of things, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because he was so positive, and he was not only like encouraging me and cheering me on, he was cheering on my competitors as well.
Yeah.
And he was not just, you know, helping me when I didn't do well, but them as well. So he was there cheering on everyone, because like you say, this was exactly what he taught me. Like, I'm not going to come there and just cheer for you and hope that the others do bad so that you win. If you want to win, you have to be the best. You don't want to win just because somebody else had a bad day. Yeah. So it gave me also this perspective of like, never hope that your competition does bad. You have to like be there for everyone. You cheer everyone on because we lift each other up. So if they do good, that is going to lift me up and help me do better.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
And you're still living to this rule regardless in a sport environment or anything else.
Yeah, I mean, in everything, really. It's funny that you mention it, because now that I started my company and I started giving talks, motivational talks, and I'm doing a lot of things, and I have been collaborating a little bit with other speakers. And it's the same. It's very easy to think like, oh, I don't want to like promote them because then they might get booked and I lose bookings. And it's a lot of people that have this scarcity mindset. It's like, yes. Here's the pie.
Yes.
And if you take one slice, then there's one slice less for me.
Mm.
But that's actually, I don't believe that. I think that we together can bake a bigger cake. So then there's more for everyone. Because if I would be the only motivational speaker, then people book me once or twice and they're not going to book me 15 times. And then they get bored of that and they see that once and it's, you know, not so interesting. But if there are so many good motivational speakers, then, you know, they see this is something good. We need to have this often and we need to book them again and again and again. So I think that it's actually this scarcity mindset, it ruins for everyone. So I think we're all always better and stronger when we lift each other up.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, it's really this mindset of abundance
that
exactly. I can see with every highly successful people, because it's never about them getting as much big of a cake as possible. Like they know that it doesn't matter. The cake is kind of infinite. And the more you share, the more you hope the best for the other people around you, then the bigger the cake. And actually you get a bigger slice.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, we don't take slices from each other. We make a bigger cake together.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Do you think that's a trait that elite athletes have? And if I extend my question, what special trait, mental trait, do you think elite athletes have that common people don't have?
Oh, God, that's very difficult to say because, I mean, elite athletes are just as, like, varied as normal people are. I mean, I think that a lot of people can get really far without having this mindset. Of course, there are a lot of people, and I know a lot of people that have this mindset of like, oh, shit, sorry. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse. No, it's like, oh, no. Okay. Like, oh, no, she did good. You know, then I don't win or I have to, you know, push myself and really not look at this as an opportunity to push themselves to be better. It's just they just want to get everything handed to them. Like, don't care if they win just because somebody else had a bad day. Of course, there are people like this. But I think in general, if you want to be an elite athlete and get all the way to the top, then you need to look at things like this as challenges to be better and look at it as pushing you to be better instead of, you know, if you just hope that you can do the minimalistic thing, it's like, this here is enough to win. If you think like that, I think it's very, very hard to get all the way to the top because you always want to do as good as you possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of normal, I always find it so funny to say, like normal people, they think like this as well. So I don't know, maybe athletes, like if I was going to poke or like point that one thing that they have that, you know, normal people don't. I mean, I think that is mostly this being willing to put in a lot of effort to get the rewards later. Because this, we as humans, we're like, we have evolved to do what gives us the most pleasure right now.
Yes.
And, you know, and whatever is good right now is worth more than something that is maybe more good, but a week from now, or a month from now, or a year from now. So if you can find a way to look past that, and if that big reward, you know, in the future, far away, if you can make that worth it to go through pain or something uncomfortable today, I think that is the biggest trait that most elite athletes probably share.
Yeah, I think that's a very big topic, how you do that, because I'm not sure we have evolved into that, but I think this is a primary function of our brain to get a reward right now, if we can, because that's a survival thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean when I say we have evolved to do it, because that's how we survive.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yes. Okay, we're on the same page on that.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me something as well, because I mean, your sport is about, basically it's about throwing. Okay,
yes.
So we could think naively that it's a lot about building the strength, building the technique, and just throw this thing as far as you possibly can. But what I understand is that this is how you started your journey as an athlete. And then at some point you evolved and you realized that the mind was like so important and you started working on all the mental aspect of it. Can you tell me more about this journey and when was the tipping point?
Yeah, definitely. So when I was younger, obviously, I thought it was just, well, just train hard, like put in all the effort, just train. And like you say, then you will get better. Mm. And then at a certain point, you know, that doesn't work anymore. And I had heard this thing, like work on your mindset. But I was like, okay, so how do you really work on your mindset?
Yeah.
And I tried working with a sports psychologist because we were offered that when I was somewhere past 20. Mm-hmm. And I actually started working with someone that didn't kind of speak my language, didn't resonate with me. So I was like, I'm like, how is this supposed to help me? I didn't quite get it. So I didn't think about it. But then before the Olympics in 2012, I'm going to say that that was my tipping point. Because half a year before, I graduate as a pharmacist. I graduate with my master's. And so the last 6 months before the Olympics, I was just going to focus on training. Up until then, I had been a student. So I was very busy, a lot of things to do. And then in this 6 month period, I was like, I mean, I had been a student. I've always had so much to do. And then all of a sudden, it felt a little bit empty. Mm-hmm. And I decided to take a Dale Carnegie class.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of them, of course.
The name, yes, but I'd love you to
explain. Oh, okay. It's a lot about like mindset, also like public speaking and like getting confidence and this kind of thing. And there, because I was always like afraid to kind of put myself out there. It sounds weird because I'd already been to Olympics at that point. Mm-hmm. But just as an example, after I finished my master's, I was asked to teach. Mm-hmm. Practical physiology at the university. And I nearly shat my pants when I got asked. I was like, oh my God, I can't do that. Like, I'm not smart enough. And, you know, I'm not good enough. And the teacher needs to know everything. And that's not me. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was the level that my confidence was at. And, like, I didn't want to take chances and go out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then I go for this course, this Dale Carnegie course, which was all about pushing it, literally like throwing you outside of your comfort zone. And there I got a little bit of like taste for that. And that developed me so much as a person. And then before the Olympics, when we went on a pre-camp, there was another sports psychologist that came with us. And we were there on a pre-camp, like you don't train so much right up until the Olympics. And we were just there, we had nothing else to do. So I was like, yeah, why not, you know, check this out and work a little bit with her. Mm-hmm. And I started working with her and she really got to me. She really spoke my language and she's also like an academic. So mm-hmm. she was very like research driven and we're the same type of people basically. And she helped me before the Olympics there in London. And we made like a super detailed game plan of how I was going to approach the competition. And I end up throwing a national record in my first throw in the qualification and going straight to the finals. So like, okay, there is something to this here. And there, I think this, like the first part of 2012 up until the Olympics and then this happening, this was really the tipping point for me of realizing how strong the mental game is. Because that Dale Carnegie course that I had, it was very, very weird, but they had us write down like a future vision.
Okay.
Like you imagine a big goal somewhere like a few months or years or whatever in the future, and you're going to imagine that you are there and you are achieving the goal. You're in that moment and you're describing how it feels and how it is and everything about it. And I did that. Of course, it was like 6 months before the Olympics. I couldn't think about anything else. So I remember I wrote down this detailed description, like how I throw, like I break my record in the first throw and I make it to the finals. And I even like write how I jump up in the air and I scream and I run to my coach and I hug him. Like this is exactly what happened then 6 months later. So this also got me thinking like about the power of the mind. Like I had seen this, I had made this in my head 6 months before and now it happened. And so detailed, like this is not a coincidence because I started manifesting it because I'd written it down and I was reading it and I believed it. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was going to happen, and it did. So after that, I started thinking more about the mental training, and very long answer to your question, sorry.
No, I like that.
No, but, and then I continued working with that sports psychologist, and I'm still working with her today. And I've learned so incredibly much. And then I really started seeing like how important the mindset is. But up until that point, it was more like you just train hard and you throw further. Like,
yes. And how much an impact did that have on your physical performance? Like, were you able to, I mean, obviously you got a national record. So I think it's,
I went to the Olympic finals.
Right away. Yeah. But was it like 5%, 10% increase? Is it something that could be measured? And how much is that because of the work you have done on the mind versus the experience you have accumulated and maybe the confidence you had in yourself?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It has made that confidence. Like, the confidence doesn't just come just because you do it for a long time. You have to work on it. That's the thing. It's not like, oh, you do sports for 10 years and then you have confidence. I can tell you there are a lot of people that have been doing sports for years and years and years, and they do not have good confidence. Because if you don't handle it right, the sport can also chip away of your confidence. Because if you are putting in that effort, you are training, but you still don't perform, that rips down your confidence. Like, so it's not a given just because you've done it for a long time that you actually get stronger mentally. You have to work on it. And I mean, it's very difficult to say if I can measure it, but I can tell you, like, I've had my best seasons after that. Mm-hmm. And even like now at age 35, I'm having the best season of my 20-year career. So I think that's, and I mean, now first I'm really mastering the mindset in the way that it's like really helping me. I've been working on it for a long time, but it's not like you start working on it and it comes like this. That's not how it works. I mean, I've been working on it for years to get to the point where I'm at now.
So can you share some kind of like toolbox that people can use to build up their mind to the point where they can use the full power of the mind?
Oh God, there are so many things that you can do. It depends on what exactly you want to do. But actually, funny that you should mention that, because if there are any athletes that are watching this, I am now starting, like I said, I'm making this online course where I'm sharing my experience, and I'm going to have a lot of like projects, like hands-on. I'm not just talking about you should grow your confidence.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the tools to actually do that. But I think visualization is huge. That's when you visualize and you see yourself doing it the way that you want to do it. And the same with like writing that future vision, see yourself achieving your goal and going through the process, not just being there in the end.
Yeah.
And you know, then you manifest it.
Yeah.
I mean, the secret, this is a little bit of the secret. I don't like it when you say, just, oh, you just think about doing it and then it's going to happen. But the thing is that when you think about it, and when you tell yourself that you can do something, it gets stuck somewhere here, like in the back of your mind. And when you're constantly reminding yourself of that goal, it will change your actions and it will make you more likely to take the actions that will get you there eventually. And that's how the manifestation works. It's not just that you sit on the couch and you wish for it and it will come to you.
Yeah.
Of course not. But there are a lot of things like this, like visualization, manifestation, and using like affirmations, how you talk to yourself is huge when it comes to building confidence. And I think confidence is the thing that most of us struggle with, not just athletes, just anyone.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we're talking to ourselves all of the time.
Yes.
All of the time. Like, there's a conversation going on in our head, and how that conversation, what do you say, like the tone of the conversation or how it sounds, it controls how we feel. Like, if you make a mistake and you say, oh, you're so stupid, why would you do this? Like, you wouldn't say these things to your friends.
Yes.
But if you say it to yourself, you're going to tear yourself down. But if in that same instance, the conversation is something like, ah, that was unfortunate, but it's okay. Let's just clean it up and it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel completely different. So I used affirmations a lot. It's basically, I don't know if you, affirmations, mantras, whatever. It's just basically what you say to yourself.
Yeah.
And you need to be a little bit proactive, because this happens, like, it's a reaction, it happens automatically. So what you can do to fight it is to decide beforehand, how am I going to talk to myself? And you can write it down, like sentences, and then you repeat them in your mind. And you tell yourself whatever it is that you want to feel or believe or whatever.
What you say is very important about preparing things, talking to yourself before things happen, because most of the time we don't get prepared.
Exactly.
And you need to do that in a space where you are calm, when you're in control, and when you can trust your words. Otherwise, they come automatically like, gosh, why did you do that? You're not good enough.
Exactly. And I mean, just as an example, before I go into a competition, I always write down like 2 or 3 affirmations that I use during the competitions. That is just sentences that I am repeating over and over again in my head to be in the mental state that I want to be in. And because I know that if I have a bad throw, it's very easy to, because I don't know if you know, like a javelin competition is very long. It takes an hour. Usually we get 6 throws. So if the first throw is bad, it's very easy to start thinking like, oh no, I'm not in good shape today, or I just can't throw far today, or, you know, and you start rationalizing, you start putting meaning into that one throw.
Of course.
So, and then next throw is going to be bad because you've already decided that before you even try.
Yes.
And that's why I prepare and I decide beforehand how I'm going to think. And I have even written it down, and then I just repeat that in my mind. And these thoughts that might come because of that one bad throw, they're just pushed aside. There's no space for them.
Yes.
Because my mind is occupied with something else.
Yes.
And I want to say, because you asked for tools, I'm actually doing it now that I'm sharing a lot of like free resources. Like I have a workbook for setting goals for the month. I have a workbook for preparing for a competition, for building habits. People can just go to my website. They can download them for free. And there is like very tangible steps. Like it's literally just a sheet of paper. You just have to fill in the blanks, and this will guide you through how you can do it.
I will absolutely pick up your brain on that later on.
Because I think that is so important, because it's often, and I felt this myself, I'm very like, you know, squared person, and I the actual sheet type. And when people tell me like, you need to work on your mindset, I'm like, yeah, okay, but how?
Yeah,
like, what do I do? I'm here now. I sit down. What's the next step? Like, how do I do it? And I think this is where so many people get stuck. Because if somebody just tells you, go and find the information, like, you have no idea what information, where you're going to look at it, like, what are you going to write down? What are you going to do? And then it's too big and it's too intimidating and you just give up.
Absolutely. And you're so right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm making this like very short and simple and easy, and literally just fill in the blanks. And then you can use that. I mean, of course you're still going to have to do it. You're going to have to like actually print it out and fill in the blanks and then incorporate it in your life. But there is a guide. This is like me holding your hand through it. Mm. And I think that's so important, because I used to be that person. I didn't know how to do it. I needed someone to hold my hand. And now my hand has been held for 20 years. So,
you know, and I think that's exactly that, because one of the reasons I started this podcast is because I want to tell people this is so important to work on your mind. And you can work on your mind in the same way you work on your body in the gym, or you work on your nutrition. You take a book and you know what to eat. But when it comes to the mind, people are a bit lost. But in reality, if you work with someone who knows what he's talking about or she's talking about in your case, then you can go through a step-by-step method, and you can step-by-step, you can train, condition your mind to be stronger and achieve your dreams.
Exactly. That's what I think. And I think that this working, like everything that comes to like mental health and working on your mindset, this is very big right now, but it hasn't been very big for long. So like you say, the fitness industry has been so big for so long that everybody knows, like, if I want to get in shape, I can go out and I run, or I go to the gym and here I can get a training program.
Yeah.
But it's a little more complicated when you want to work on your mental strength versus your physical strength. And people don't know what to do, and there are no exact training plans.
Yes.
And this is why I'm trying to help a little bit with
that. And I think this is so much needed. Because what I can observe interviewing a lot of elite athletes is that a lot of elite athletes do that quite intuitively. So they know what they are doing when you ask questions, but they didn't really set up a system. So having someone like you who have been an elite athlete, who have education to structure a program, and we put a program together is really needed.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because the reason that I decided to make this online course that I'm working on right now is that I feel like there's so many things that every athlete experiences, but they don't know how to deal with it and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, true.
And there might be, like, you can find information about recovery here and a little bit about mindset here, and a little bit about this here, but like to have the whole package and all of these questions that you don't necessarily know if you haven't been there. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody asks themselves, is this worth my time? Mm-hmm. You know, what if I don't achieve my goal? What then? And how do I enjoy this more? And how do I deal with, you know, when I can't get it out, what I know I can do, or if I get injured, like it's super tough mentally, how do I deal with that? And all of these things, like, you have to figure it out yourself. And there isn't really good information in one place. So I wanted to make that because I've had to. It took me 20 years and now I'm finally in a good place and I'm having the best year of my career, like the best season. And I'm like, it should not take everyone 20 years to get here.
No, absolutely. That's really like buying a shortcut, sort of.
Yeah, exactly. I'm basically giving them a shortcut. I mean, we don't all have to invent the wheel. It doesn't make any sense.
No, and to your point as well, when people hear about affirmation, visualization, there is a lot of misconception about that. But in fact, there is a real process to achieve what visualization is about, to understand what visualization or affirmation is about. There is a real process behind that. You were talking about the importance of building the emotion.
And
we achieve things by really connecting to this emotion, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's very true. And I mean, what you, especially how you talk to yourself and how you think, that creates our emotions, it dictates them. And then how we feel is going to control how we behave.
Yeah.
So it's, and that, how we behave, that controls what happens in our lives, you know? So it all starts back with how you talk to yourself and how you think.
Yeah, that's very true.
So that's why I think it's so important to address that. And we can take control. There's so many people, and it hurts me so much when I hear people say, well, I am just like this. This is just the kind of person that I am. Hmm. I've always been like this. And it's like, yeah, but we can all work on that. Like, we can always change.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but it's possible if you really want to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important.
Exactly. It's all about teaching people that they have a choice and teaching them how to access this choice. Because in all fairness, it's not easy for everyone. When everything seems to falling apart around you,
You're
not necessarily in this space where you feel like, yeah, you know what? I've got it. I've got this choice. I can make a different choice. That's hard. But so that's why you need to have systems. You need to have methods. You need to train yourself for that.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. All of this stuff is not easy. Mm. It's a lot of work and it's hard. All that I'm saying is that it is worth it. Because this is what I hear so often. Yeah, but like my life is so tough. I'm in such a tough situation. I'm like, yeah, nobody said it was easy.
Yeah.
I just said it was possible. It's a huge difference.
Just talking about your case, so I know that between 2005, 2008, you had like pretty hard time.
Yeah.
You lost your dad, you had some injuries.
Yeah.
So what was your mindset by then? What did you tell yourself and how did you overcome that?
Well, first in 2005, I got a stress fracture in my foot. This was before my dad passed away.
Mm.
And it was a big injury because like it sounds like small, a little stress fracture in your foot, but it was in a small bone deep in the foot where there's very little circulation. So they didn't even know if it was ever going to heal.
Yeah.
And actually at the same time as I got this injury, there were two other athletes, a footballer and another track athlete, that got the same. And they both had to have surgery and had put a nail in the bone, and it never healed. They both had to quit. But I had gotten like small injuries before that, but like I said, I didn't have the best mindset when I was younger, and I was, I had a very big temper, and I would get very strong feelings of disappointment when things didn't go well. So I started thinking to myself even before this, like, can I do this? Am I strong enough mentally to deal with all of the adversities that I will face if I will go for this lifestyle? And I was really in the middle of thinking about that. And then I get this injury in my foot. And when I finally, it took, like, it happens in May, and they don't find out that it's a fracture until after the season. So I went through the whole season, like, trying to compete and trying to fix it. And that was very tough. And then I find out what it is and what we can do about it. And it might never be better. And then I think, if I can get through this, then I can get through anything. So, because I have been thinking before, I don't know if I'm strong enough for this. And then I just decided, okay, if I can't go through this, then I will stop worrying about whether I'm strong enough, because I know that I am. And I'm just like, I will just take one day at a time. I will follow all the instructions. I will do everything that the doctor tells me. I will do everything that I can do to make this heal faster. Like, I put a, like, a brace on my foot. They didn't put a cast. And I wasn't allowed to step on the foot for 2 months. And you should have seen me. I was like a chicken in the shower. I literally didn't even tip my toe down because I was told that I couldn't put any weight on the foot because I could take the brace off to shower. So I really, to the teeth, I followed the instructions. But then it healed. And I went through it like day by day and did what I could in training. And then I went after 2 months and I had another MRI on my foot. And the doctor came to me and he was like, what did you do? And I'm like, oh no, what happened? And I was like, I can't believe this. I can't see the fracture. It has healed completely. I don't believe this. I've never seen this before. What did you do? It was just because I followed the instructions so closely. So after that, I was like, I'm stronger than I think. So I can do this. And then I actually had quite a hard time starting to train again because my muscles in my foot had atrophied so much. I always joke that my calf muscle in that leg was like oatmeal in a bag. That's not an exaggeration. And so it was a tough road coming back. And then my father dies right in that process. So that was super tough. And like I told you before, he was always there for me. He was the one supporting me. And with the mental thing and when things were going bad, he was always the one that could talk to me. And all of a sudden, he was gone. And the rest of my family, they're not really into sports. And they were not really into what I was doing. So all of a sudden, I went from having someone supporting me that much to having nobody. As it felt, like, not really. So it was like, okay, that was super tough. And again, I remember I went to training the day after he died and everybody was super surprised to see me there. But I got this feeling, first of all, I just couldn't lie home and cry anymore. But it was also like he would not want me to throw all of this away. He would not want me to give up after having come this far. Because at this point, I was like, I was just about to make it to my first major championships, the Europeans. My first adult championships were that season. So it's like the preparation of coming into like the real world, so to speak, as an athlete was done at that point. And, you know, I've made it to all championships except for two because of injury since then. And I'm like, I can't stop now. I can't give up now. And he would not have wanted that. And that kind of helped me push through it to think of like how he would not have wanted me to throw all of that away.
What you say is extremely interesting because the events are the same for everyone. The situations are the same for everyone, but it's all about the story we are telling to ourselves. It's all about how we see this event, what kind of meaning we want to give to this event. And in your case, you decided to tell yourself, if I go through this injury, then I know that basically you can bring everything to me. I will overcome it.
And I got so much of that, like the season after that, I had a tear in my elbow and I had to have a surgery. So like 2005 until 2008 was super difficult because it was like injury, my father died, injury, then that injury came again. But when I went through the elbow injury after that, I kind of had already told myself I can do this. I'm strong enough. So I, exactly. There was no doubt in my mind anymore. Yeah. Like I did this before. I know I can do it again. So I was way calmer about it somehow.
That's why we need to be very mindful when something happens to us, because we always have a choice, no matter how hard it is, to decide how we see the situation. And whatever you're telling yourself at this point is going to be very important. What is going to happen next, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And this also controls, like I say, how we deal with it and how we feel. I use this a lot, like, you know, how when something happens, like between what happens and what how you react to it, there is a space where you can make a decision. And this is the only power that can never be taken away from us. That is our power to choose how we respond to what happens to us. And I talk about this a lot. I do also one-on-one coaching and goal setting and mindset. Mm. And I always take this example of imagine that you're stuck in traffic and you have one guy who is just like, oh, you know, super stressed. He's late for something and is hitting the steering wheel. And, you know, he's super irritated with all the cars stuck in front of him. He doesn't feel very good. He's super stressed and he feels horrible. And in the next car, you can have someone else who's in the exact same traffic jam, the exact same situation, just looking at it and going, ah, that's a shame. And then just like, okay, now I have an opportunity to listen to my favorite podcast or talk to whoever is in the car with me.
Yeah.
That person is calm and feels much better. And this is like the precisely same situation, but two different reactions. And it's only here. How do you, are you going to be the guy screaming and hitting the steering wheel or the one listening to his podcast?
Exactly. And that can be learned.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Like, of course, sometimes it's more difficult than other times. I mean, we can have horrible things happen to us, but we can still always choose how we look at it and how we deal with it and respond to it.
And to your point, in the same way, you said, okay, you have to talk to yourself positively when it's the right time to do it, when you are not under pressure. In the same way, you need to educate your brain as well to make different choices.
Yes.
I mean, and train yourself to do it when you don't have to make these choices. So you build it up.
Exactly.
Wait, actually something bad to happen to train that.
Yeah, no, you can't train it then, but you can use it then. This is why, like, you know, like I said before, when I prepare for a competition, I do the preparation before, because then I'm not in the situation. I'm not feeling the emotions. I'm not emotionally invested in the situation. I can sit down and be logical about it and think, what is best for me to be thinking in this situation? And then I write it down. Then when I am in the situation and feeling the emotions and maybe can't think as clearly and neutrally about it, then I don't have to think because I have it there prepared.
Yeah.
So the preparation or deciding how you're going to talk to yourself or deciding what to do, you don't do that when you're in the situation. You do that before, but then you use it when you're in the situation.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about making the unfamiliar familiar.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, we got 95% of the time we are governed by the subconscious mind. So we can program that. And we need to, you cannot program it actually when things bad. I mean, when it happens, it's kind of too late. You need to be prepared before.
Yeah. You need to do it like at all times. But making the decision of how you're going to talk to yourself, you do not do that when you're in the situation. Then you don't make a good choice.
I saw actually one video of, I think that was your throw in London 2012, and you I think it was your first throw, and you're about to throw the javelin, and just when this is your turn, there is the podium, so for another race, so everyone is like clapping, and you get this ceremony, so you cannot throw the javelin when they are like doing the ceremony, you need to wait. And I was like so impressed by your ability to be in the moment, in your bubble.
Yeah.
And what happens? So first of all, what happens in your mind when that happens? And how do you prepare yourself to be so calm, so in control? And eventually you got a super good throw.
Well, this is actually exactly what we had, like I told you before, I had prepared exactly what I was going to think with my sports psychologist. We had made a plan for every scenario. Like, we made a plan. What am I going to think before the first throw? Okay, and then if the first throw is good, what am I going to think for the second throw? If the first throw is bad, what am I going to think for the second throw? So it's like, and what am I going to do between the throws? What am I going to think? What am I going to say to myself? All of these things we had planned. Funnily enough, we had not planned for a victory ceremony. But it was still, I remember I got asked about this in the interview after. This was in the finals, though. This was not in the qualification where I had the big throw. No, but I got asked by the journalist right after, like, didn't it distract you that there was the victory ceremony? And I was like, no. I was visualizing the throw over and over again. Like, I knew exactly what I was going to think. And I made a little bit of a mistake going out on the track this early. I thought they would let me throw before they closed it up, but they closed it up a little early. So I was standing out there on the runway with the javelin ready to throw while they were playing the national anthem and giving out the medals. So it was like 2 minutes or something. Yeah. You're just standing there waiting, and 2 minutes doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're standing, you know, in your competition gear, holding the javelin on the runway, about to take your first throw in the finals of the Olympics, 2 minutes is a long time.
I bet.
No, but I was just, you know, going through what we had planned for me to think. And I didn't panic. And I have no idea what victory ceremony was going on. I have no idea. I didn't even notice who it was.
So. Yeah, it's all about being prepared for the unexpected.
There it comes again. I had prepared this before.
Absolutely.
So I didn't panic when it happened, because I'm like, I know what to do now. Mm. I already decided what to do.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's talk about setting goals, because I know this is one of your favorite topic.
Yes.
So how do we set goals? What tips can you give to anyone, athletes or non-athletes? What is the best way to set a goal?
Well, first of all, if you're going to set goals for something, and I think this is a thing that a lot of people neglect, maybe, because we tend to set goals of like, what do I want to do now? Like, oh, I want to lose 5 kilos, or I want to, you know, whatever. Why? Ask yourself why. Like, why do you want to lose those 5 kilos? What is it going to do for you? And if you have a picture of where you want to go, and this is something that is very difficult for a lot of people, is like seeing, what do I want in my life?
Yeah.
What does my dream life look like? I would always start there, because your goals are really like a treasure map. And you can't make a treasure map if you have no idea where your treasure is. Mm. So you need to first know, like, what is my dream life, or where do I want to go? What is the kind of big, it doesn't need to necessarily, you can't expect that to happen, because it can be a dream. Like for me, I was training my entire career because I wanted to win an Olympic gold medal. Now I know that I won't do it. Does that mean that my 20 years were not worth it? Absolutely not. Because I am a lot closer to it than I would have been if I never would have tried.
Yeah.
So this is like, you know, if you aim high, you might not get all the way there, but you would get closer than if you wouldn't try. Mm-hmm. So if you have that vision of what your dream life looks like, and then when you set your goals, you need to ask yourself, like, is this goal moving me in that direction?
Yeah.
Because like losing these 5 kilos, what is it really going to do? Is that going to help you live your dream life? And when you do that, you set goals that mean something to you and that you really, really deeply want. Mm-hmm. And I think that is super important, because, I mean, it is difficult to stick to working towards our goals. And you need to want it enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not enough by itself, but it sure helps if you really, really want it and you have a deep reason why you want this goal. Mm-hmm. If it's just something like, so that I will look better on the beach this summer, but you're married and, you know, it doesn't matter if you look good. It's like, oh, two more guys looked at me. Like, it doesn't matter, you know. So it's not going to give you anything in the grand scheme of things. But then when you have figured out what goal you want to set, I think the most important thing, and this is what, again, what a lot of people don't do, is to break it down enough into steps so small that it's not worth not doing them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if it's too overwhelming, like if it's too big, then it can feel overwhelming and then it's easy to give up. And we do experience the most motivation when we are chasing something that is like right at the edge of our abilities. Mm. Because if it's too easy, we're not inspired. And if it's too hard, yeah, then we just give up. So it needs to push us, but not too much. Mm. But if you break it down, and then it's something that is easy to get into a habit and to work towards every day. I think these are the two biggest advices that I could give. And then we need to plan, need to make a plan. That's also something that too many people don't do. They just say like, oh, I want to run a marathon this summer. Like, okay, how are you going to do that? You know, then you need to sit down and like, okay, if I'm going to run a marathon there, I need to start running here and I need to run this much so I don't die.
Yeah.
But you need to make that plan as well, because otherwise it's just a wish.
Yes.
Like, I wish that I, you know, whatever. So yeah, I think these are kind of my biggest goal setting advices. And then it's always like, it's different people struggle with different things when it comes to this. We're all so incredibly different, but I think this is the biggest ones.
Yeah, there are some common rules.
Yeah.
And we know that, okay, we set up goals, but there is a big thing with the brain that is called homeostasis. So we tend actually to return to what we know usually, unfortunately. So we need to create some kind of habits to sustain actually the route towards the goal. So what advice would you give to people so they can set the right kind of habits?
Oh, I actually just made a YouTube video on this and I have a workbook.
I will put all the links in the podcast anyway, so people can follow you.
Yeah, because there I gave like 7 steps of actually how you can build good habits and make them stick. Because I believe like you have to have a goal. You have to know where you're aiming and you set goals. But in order to achieve your goals, you have to make good habits. Because like you say, you know, reality hits. And thing with habits is that you do them automatically. It takes some time to get them in. But once they're in, that's something you do. And then you don't have to rely on willpower all the time. Mm-hmm. That's why it's super important to build good habits. And oh God, that's again, like you need to decide what habit is going to do the most for you. Don't try to build up like 5 different habits at one time. Mm. Because like if you don't focus, like if you're focusing on too many things, you're not really focusing on anything.
Yeah.
So you need to decide, okay, what is going to be the needle mover? Like what is going to make the most impact on my life?
Yeah.
Like, let's say for me, if I sleep enough, then usually I feel better. I have more energy. It's easier to go to training. I'm more likely to eat better. So instead of like trying to focus on my eating, if I focus on my sleep, my eating will get better. So the sleep is the needle mover for me. So if I'm going to make one habit, it would be to go to bed at like 10:30 every night. So these kind of, you need to find what is the most important habit. And then one good trick that is super important is to connect it to our identity. To not think of it like I am trying to, like for me, I'm trying to go to training every day, or I want to train every day. No, I am a person that likes to take care of her body and challenge it. And in order for me to be that person, I need to train every day. You see, that this is a very subtle difference. But the thing is with humans is like we fight tooth and nail to hang on to our identity. And if we believe it, we will do anything to protect it. Yeah. So if you use that, you're more likely to do the habit. Because then it's a stronger bond. And then again, you need to like plan when you're going to do it. I always say where, when, and how. And you need to plan for challenges. Because life is going to happen. I mean, it's just a good example. I wanted to build the habit of writing a gratitude journal every morning.
Yeah.
And at first, like I would forget it. So I started connecting it to other habits that I already had. Like when I sit down with my morning coffee after breakfast, I would write my gratitude journal. But then like that worked really well. So I say like, when am I going to do it with my morning coffee? Where in my office? How, like when I'm having my coffee, like, so I had a very good plan and I didn't have to remember it.
Yeah, make but it then, easy for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Then it's super easy. And then every time I sit down with my morning coffee, I feel like, oh, I should be writing my gratitude journal. And then I would go on a trip somewhere and I'm not at home in my office, and I'm having my morning coffee in some airport somewhere, and I don't have my journal up, what do I do then? You know, so you have to also think about this, because, you know, life is going to happen. It's never going to be always your routine. So you need to plan for that as well.
Yeah.
And then I think the absolute biggest thing is don't expect to be perfect, because it's about what you do most of the time. So many people like, oh no, I haven't done the habit now for 2 or 3 days in a row. You know, screw it. I can't do this. And they give up. It's not about what we do all of the time. It's what we do most of the time. And that's how we make it a habit.
Yeah.
So it's too common that people beat themselves up if they don't do it all the time. They mess up a few times, then they put too much meaning into it and they decide, oh no, I can't do this. I'm not the kind of person that can do this.
Yeah.
The classic. And then they just give up on the whole thing. You need to have that, like, okay, didn't work here, push that aside, let's start over and just continue.
Yeah, so it's all about training the self-talk. As you said at the beginning, like we tend to be very hard with ourselves. We are talking to ourselves like we would not be talking to our best friend. And and though we do. So training yourself actually to be more supportive.
Your compassion, self-compassion. I mean, I have big temper and all of that. When I was younger, oh my God, I said things to myself I wouldn't say to anyone, not even my enemies. Like, you know, I have never called anyone an idiot as much as myself. Like, why do we do that? Why do we do that to ourselves? So it all comes back to, in the basics, like your mindset, because your thoughts create your emotions and your emotions create your behavior, and that dictates where your life goes.
Absolutely. So
it all goes back to how we talk to ourselves.
It is.
You can have the perfect plan to set goals and make those fantastic habits, but if you're telling yourself all of the time that you can't do it, then you can't do it.
Yeah. And what people don't know is we have about 70,000 thoughts a day. So that's about one thought per second. So most of the thoughts are automatic thoughts. We are not aware of them. They don't come to our consciousness. So if you keep repeating yourself, you're not worth it, you're not good enough, this is actually this tape that is in your head constantly.
Yeah. And this is why it's so important, coming back to the affirmations, to tell yourself. Sometimes you need to tell yourself something that you want to believe, even if you don't necessarily believe it. Like, I am a good person, I'm worthy of good things. Whatever, like something like this. And when you say it at first, you might not believe it, but you still should like stand in front of the mirror and like say it with conviction out loud to yourself.
Exactly.
And the thing is, and what is so wonderful is that if we say it enough, we start believing it.
Yeah.
You might not believe it at first, but if you do it often enough, you will start believing it. And then it's going to change your mindset.
Yeah.
But a lot of people stop because it feels weird and they don't really believe it and it feels fake, but it isn't. Our mind is so simple. It believes what we tell it. And if we tell it all the time that we are failures or that we can't do something, then it will continue repeating that and it believes it. And then confidence, of course, is going to be shattered.
Absolutely. So let's talk about life balance, because to me, I mean, you're really an inspiration, like elite athlete. You got a great personal life. I mean, as far as I can see through YouTube, okay, that's it, but that looks pretty good. And you got a PhD. So I guess my question is, what advice would you give to people to get a balanced life? Because what I hear a lot, and especially this is probably a message that I hope some parents can get, they are like, no, it's either you do school or you do sport or art or whatever it is you like. What I realize is that it's not true. You can absolutely do everything you want, but there is a reality behind that. You need to put hard work. You need to be smart about it. You need to strategize. You need to be well supported by your environment and stuff like that. But I'm talking too much. So tell me about that, and what advice would you give?
I mean, I honestly don't believe in balance per se, because I don't think it's going to be balanced, because you cannot have a little bit of everything. You're always going to do more of the things that you're more interested in. Like, you can't train for elite athletes, you can't and like do a PhD and have a lot of social life and hang out with your family all the time. Like, we just have 24 hours in the day. So you're simply going to have to prioritize and think what is most important to you. And it doesn't mean that you have to choose only one thing, because you can do more than one thing. I mean, I did a PhD. I finished the PhD here at the same time as I was training for the Olympics and the World Championships. So it's definitely possible. And I mean, what that looks like is just a lot of organization. You need to organize your time and you need to plan, like you say. But then at the same time as I was doing that, I mean, I didn't have a lot of social life at the same time. And I have missed a lot of family events. And there, of course, like, there are upsides and downsides, but you need to decide or figure out, like, what is most important to me. You can't have like that idea of balance where you can have it all. I don't believe that, but you can definitely have the things that matter the most to you. And I mean, if I just tell you, when I was doing my PhD, I had decided that I was going to do it a little bit slower. Didn't really end up doing it slower in the end, but like, so I had limited time. I just decided, like, I will be in the lab between 9 and 4. So I would like get up in the morning, go to the lab, and I was working until 4, and I would go home and I would train from 5 to 7, 8, something like that. I come home and I have dinner, and I did not have energy to go out and hang out with friends all the time. Of course, I would make an effort to keep in contact with my friends, and I would do it every now and then, but I couldn't do it every day because I also had to rest. Mm-hmm. But I planned out my workday and everything that I was doing in the lab, and I was so efficient that I got everything done in those hours I was there, mm-hmm. because I was so efficient at it. And I've gotten this question a lot about combining sports and studies. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super important, because you as an athlete, you can only train so much. Like, you can't be training 12 hours a day. It's not possible. Nobody can do that. And I think it's necessary for you to give your mind a break. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that a lot myself. Like, when I was in the lab and I was working on my studies, then I had to think, and I was using the creative side of my brain, and I was, you know, strategizing and planning, and I was resting my body. I wasn't using my body.
Yeah.
And then I went to training, and then I could rest my mind. Well, mostly, sometimes I had to think a little bit. and then I would get the energy out of my system, and I would move my body, and my body would feel better.
Yeah.
But when you move, your concentration is also better. So when I was in the lab, I got more done in shorter time because I was exercising.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it actually helped each other, because, you know, because I was moving. If I would not have been moving, then I would not have been so focused in my work. Mm. And the same, because I had been, you know, sitting all day and thinking, it felt so good to just come and just not have to think and just, you know, lift the weights or do whatever I had to do. So it was kind of like, now this is done and I get a break and I can do the other thing. And I think this helped me in, you know, both. Of course, it was a little bit of a puzzle too, and it was not easy to combine them. But I think it's just so important that you have something else in your life.
Yeah.
Because when I would get injured, if I'm only training, I have all of the time in the world to let my mind spin about that injury and worry about it and make possible scenarios and what if this and what if that. And I have nothing else to focus on.
Yeah.
But for me, I would just put more focus on my work, like on the studies, on my experiments. And then I could kind of shift that focus and put the injury aside, because nothing is going to happen with the injury if you think about it more. So I think in that sense, it's very good to have something else. Like, you don't want to put all of your eggs in the same basket, so to speak.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I think that is, I mean, and then of course, like, I thought about this thing with my family and with my friends. I'm so lucky to have great people in my life, so they understand what I'm doing. And it's not like my friends just close me off just because I can't come to every party. But they know that there are periods of the year, like in the summer, I'm competing and I just can't be there as much. But in the fall, I have some time off and then I spend more time with my family and friends. And now when I'm, you know, quitting, then I can have all the time in the world with my family and friends, or so to speak. Now I'm starting to work.
So now your focus is on the on your company. No more competition, or
maybe come back
next year to the Olympics?
No. I'm still competing now. I will not come back to the Olympics next year. This is my last season, but I actually have a competition a few days from now. What, 5 days from now when we record this? Yeah, so I'm definitely not done. I'm going to do the last month now of the season, but I had decided that this was my last season. There are a lot of reasons for that. And of course, it was super unfortunate that they postponed the Olympics and the coronavirus. I mean, it was devastating for me, to be honest. And because this was supposed to be my like big finale, final year with the Olympics and European Championships and like going out with a bang in the shape of my life. And then poof, everything gone. Like they postponed the Olympics, they canceled the Europeans. But that gave me the opportunity to connect a little bit again with why I'm doing this in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I had to ask myself, when they canceled the Europeans, I had to sit down with myself and like, so what am I going to do?
Yeah,
exactly. Am I going to quit now? Or am I going to do this last season? And I'm like, I am basically going to finish the way that I started. Just having fun, trying to throw far. And for me now, there is no big competition. So I'm just trying to break my record. Because that's super cool, breaking your record in your last year at age 35. So
we'll absolutely follow that.
But I don't want to train for another year. Like at this age, I can feel my body is getting tired. It takes longer for me to recover. And I want it to be my decision.
Sure.
I want to be at peace with my decision. I don't want to have an injury and be forced to stop.
Yeah.
And if I do one more year, then the chances of that are so big. And I don't want to risk that. Like I'm starting to feel content. Like this was fun, but now it's time to do other things in life. And that is exactly how I always wanted to finish my career. So
I'm so grateful you say that. And I'm so happy for you. I think this is such an important message as well, because I see a lot of people for which their identity is equal to their job or is equal to their sport. And this is not about it. It's only a part of their journey. And
yes.
And I think everything that you have been talking about, it's really about having self-awareness, having a deep understanding about who we are. And then when you do that, then you realize that actually there is so much more that life can offer to you. And it doesn't really matter what life is throwing out of you.
Yeah.
You just learn new things and that you can reach new... Just writing a new chapter of your life.
Exactly. I mean, I kind of started preparing for this. I mean, I started my company and I started with all that motivational side of it last year. And that was kind of starting my transition over to normal life. But so for me, it's easy. I mean, a lot of athletes, when they quit, if they have no education, they have nothing else, it's super difficult. And you have your identity. Like, it's still going to be different for me and difficult and strange when I'm all of a sudden not the javelin thrower anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a former javelin thrower. That's going to be really strange, because that is also an identity that others have given me and that I have kind of gotten.
And
it will be a transition to not be that anymore.
Yes.
But a lot of people are asking me, like, how can you quit when you're in the shape of your life? I'm like, because I'm in the shape of my life. How much fun is that to get to go out on top when you decide to, instead of like your results are starting to go down or you get injured or something like that? Why would I wait for that? Why not finish when I feel ready, when, you know, I'm still in good shape and I can finish happy?
Well, thank you so much. We are about to finish this podcast. I have I have like so much more question that I wanted to ask you, but I want to be mindful of the time as well. Maybe we should have another podcast later after you break your national record. We will do that, absolutely.
Yes.
But before we finish, I would like to really acknowledge you for being the perfect representation of someone who is exploring life. And it's such an inspiration, really, to see how you are writing the page of your own book. And I cannot wait to read the next chapter, to be honest. So thank you so much for being such an inspiration. I really acknowledge you for all that, having such a positive attitude.
And thank you so much.
I would like to finish with one last question. Okay. Ooh. Knowing everything you know now, having all your wisdom, if you had the opportunity to go back in time, imagine that you have to go back in time, and you can visit yourself as a kid, as a very young person, what age would you go back? And what would you tell yourself?
Oh, it's hilarious that you asked me that, because when I'm preparing my course, I actually did, right? Like relating to the sports, like I actually did this, like I even have a video coming out on it, the biggest lessons from my career, what I wish I could tell my 16-year-old self. So I'm gonna talk about that. No, I actually had like a few points that I wanted to tell my 16-year-old self, because that was really when I was starting seriously with the sport. And I think that, like I said, there are six different advices, but I think that the main thing would be to work on my mindset, to not ignore that part, and never ever forget to have fun and enjoy what I'm doing.
Oh, that's a good one.
That is the biggest thing, because
that's a very good one.
I've gone off that path a few times in my career, and when I found that one back, that's when my results started to come back. So
so thank you so much for spending time with me today. I really, really enjoyed our conversation. I wish you all the best for whatever is coming next, and I will absolutely follow you, whatever it is.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And if you have enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share with a friend and subscribe. See you in the next episode.